At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Yes on Prop 27 and DraftKings. Half the country already allows online sports betting for adults 21 and older. It's time to let California fans in on the action. There's no good reason your friends in New York, Chicago, Phoenix, Portland, and Boston can bet online while Californians are still forced to deal with shady bookies. Prop 27 ensures California finally catches up. So vote yes on Prop 27.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
Thursday morning, November 3rd, 2022. It is the Beating the Book podcast, Mega Podver Week number 9 in the National Football League. I believe I'm contractually obligated to say, wow, we're at week 9 already? Skill Alexander, thanks for joining us. Let's get some more good picks today. It's been a great season here on the show. Of course, the staples of the show first, from his mom's cork attic in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, coming off an 8,000-calorie day, now that his weight loss challenge bet is done, it's Todd Wishnev. How you doing, Todd?
Hey, Gilly. What's up, baby? Got some energy. Got a lot of calories in me. Let's do this, baby. Let's go.
All right, so we'll explain why Todd's weight loss challenge is over and why he's mashugging to having 8,000 calories on a cheat day right afterwards. And then Jeff Parlay, ladies and gentlemen, VSiN host Jeff Parlay to my right. How you doing, Jeffrey?
I'm good, Gil. It's one of those 3 days a year where it rains here.
Yes.
So every single person on the highway on the drive-in is essentially playing Frogger on the highway this morning, trying to not get into an accident because people were driving 35 miles an hour on a 65-mile-an-hour road.
That's different than L.A. L.A., if it rains, it's the same speed, and they're right up on your butt, and you're like, all right, dude, you're gonna just hydroplane into me. This is going to be fun when I break. Eric Eager joins us as our rotating guest for the day, formerly a Pro Football Focus, now with Sumer Sports, Dr. Eric Eager. How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing great. I can't believe we're at the exact halfway mark of the NFL season, and there are exactly three good teams in the whole league.
There are exactly three good teams. We, by the way, so on a numbers game, we don't necessarily do it on the podcast here on the Megapod, but we go through the power rankings, as I'm sure you do, and literally for like since week three, it's been whatever order. People can quibble about the order, but I've had it Bills, Chiefs, Eagles, and then it appears like there's the 4 through 7 has kind of gotten defined. It's sort of like that Ravens, Bengals, Cowboys, what's the team I'm forgetting? 49ers group. And then after that, man, have at it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, Minnesota's won some games, yep, but they're not terribly impressive.
Miami, I guess. Giants.
Yeah, I think Miami could be good, especially if Tua's healthy. It sounds like he's really meshing with that offense. Bradley Chubb, I think that's an overpay. I think they're going to regret that in the future. But as far as this year, hopefully he adds something to them. But yeah, it's desolate, man. And the other weird thing is, like, I mean, there aren't like the truly awful teams either, right? Like Detroit gets 14-point leads against everybody. Houston was leading against the Raiders just a couple weeks ago in the fourth quarter. Like there isn't a team either that's like the Giants from last year.
So let's sort of tie up some loose ends here. You were at Pro Football Focus. You're now at Sumer Sports. Explain the transition and what you're doing now.
Yeah. So I left PFF early September. Thomas Dimitroff, who is the former general manager of the Falcons, was somebody who I've been good friends with for a while. I helped him a lot when he was, sort of during his tenure with Atlanta, pricing out players and stuff like that. And so when he left there or got fired there, he and I had been, sort of looking for his next step. Instead of going back in the league as a GM, he decided to be the CEO with Sumer Sports. Sumer Sports is owned by Paul Tudor Jones, who is like a kind of a infamous or famous, equities trader. And over time, he eventually convinced me to come over. So we're working on a lot of, stuff for NFL teams. We're also working on some forward facing stuff. The first of which is our podcast, the Sumer Sports Show, which is every Wednesday. Came out fifth episode yesterday. But we're eventually going to get into the space of fantasy football and gambling and all that fun stuff, Gil. So
nice.
I'm really excited. PFF was a great place to spend 7 years, but it was time, and I really enjoyed my time there. But it was time to move on.
Good for you, man. So glad to hear you doing good things, bigger things, and potentially bigger than current even. Todd Wishnev, who we talked about with his weight loss challenge with Steve Fezzik. So, Todd, you can give the real brief account again. How did this resolve itself?
Well, we got to a point. I got within 1 pound of him down to 193 to 192. When we started, it was 289 to 227 was the weights, and the bet was that I could get below him in 1 year. I got as far from May 11th to May 11th of 2022 to 2023. I got as close as 193, 192. I probably could have beat him if I would have been fasting for a couple of days there at the end. But then he went on a nice little fasting run and got down to 187. I was 193. I had been kind of feeling listless for the last maybe couple weeks, and I was already down 111 pounds. So I just decided to offer up a truce and a tie. So we called it a tie. Everybody lost a lot of weight. It was a very excellent experience for both of us. And then on Tuesday, I decided, since I've eaten 1,500 calories a day for 186 days in a row and exercised 2.5 hours a day on average, which means there were some days that were over 4 hours, I decided to go hog wild, so to speak, and ate, as you showed on the numbers game feature, 7,900 calories.
We listed every single item he ate.
It's a shame. And I would have flown in. Todd, if I had realized this, I would have flown into Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
You and I would have gone to Permane's together. And
just so you know, the weight stabilization program is now me moving to 2,000 calories a day, which is basically my equilibrium number. However, I'm going to continue exercising, which means every week I'm going to have a bank full of exercise calories to use on a weekly cheat day. So every week will be a holiday for me, as long as I keep going with this program, as I did from 2011 to 2014,
right.
It was a tremendous thing every week. So there will be cheat days that will include Fatso Jeffrey and Fatso Gilly.
This dude is fat shaming us. It's unbelievable. So listen, and I just want to clarify for just two things. One, you and Steve inspired a nation. It was awesome. I'm glad. What's also interesting about this is, and for people wondering, well, why can't you just be a normal person and just eat normal every day? Is it correct to say that the way that your brain works, your sort of addictive personality, and by the way, I was a little concerned about the 8,000 calorie day. I don't want to make light of it. That the only way for you to maintain is to do it this mechanical way where you eat and then have where you maintain 2,000 calories and then have the cheat day. Like, you couldn't do it any other way. It doesn't work for you.
I mean, it seems to be that once the slippery slope starts of, okay, well, oh, I'll just have a little something extra today, or, oh, I'll just eat a little bit earlier
today. Doesn't
work for
you. Okay.
It seems to be that the structure is keeping the wheels in place, so to speak.
Last thing, you offered Steve an $8,000 cash out. He was supposed to, he was going to owe you $9,000 if he lost. When you got really close, you offered an $8,000 cash out. He said on a numbers game yesterday he was offended by the offer. what do you make of people who now, after all is said and done, say, well, didn't Todd lose the bet then? What do you say to them?
No, if I would have lost the bet, I would have lost $3,000 because I didn't get below him. he still accepted the tie as a buyout because he didn't want to have to stay below. What was going to happen is he was going to get to 180. I was going to get to 180, which was the push mark. But then for the rest of the year, he had to stay below 185. Brutal. So it was good for him to get out too.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I agree.
It was good for everybody.
I agree. Okay. Let us begin with dumbbell of the week. Do you have a dumbbell of the week from last week?
Yeah, I do.
Let Toddy go ahead.
I had Carolina Panthers money line on an in-game bet, and had they not thrown the pick six at the end of the first half, they would have won that game easily. They dominated that football game. At the end, of course, they're up four. They give up the touchdown, and now I'm like, okay, I'm going to lose for sure. And we get the miracle DJ Moore touchdown. And DJ Moore rips his helmet off. No, supposedly he was out of bounds. They shouldn't have even called it. Okay, whatever. Be that as it may, as they call the penalty, I'm like, well, of course I'm going to miss the extra point. It's a guarantee now that they missed the extra point.
It's from 48. Guaranteed.
I absolutely knew. In fact, if I could have bet I'm going to miss the extra point on the 47-yard extra point, I would have bet $1 million on that. I knew that was coming. Okay, now let's fast forward into the overtime. They get the pick. Now they're all the way down there. And here is the dumbzo, and this you could literally play for almost every coach in the NFL, okay? They stop playing at this point. They go, oh, well, it's a 33-yard field goal. Of course we could make a 33-yard field goal. Who could miss a 33-yard field goal? How about one time in a million? One time in a million times, play action, because the other team knows you're just going to run it into the line three times and kick the field goal. Play action, dink it to your tight end to get even closer. Maybe you get inside the 5-yard line and it's really a no-brainer, you know, old school extra point from like the 2-yard line. Could we do that one time? Would it kill anyone? And what's amazing is the coaches do it even from the 29 when they have like a 46-yarder lined up. I just don't understand why they think a field goal is a guarantee, even in the National Football League. So, it's not a guarantee.
So Eddie Pinheiro misses the 33-yarder, and then, of course, the Falcons matriculate down the ball down the field, and then young Haiku puts in the 41-yarder to win it, and you're sunk. Let me just say this about the helmet thing real quick. Especially when, you know, the controversy of calling that penalty is especially highlighted when I'm watching the Washington Commodores play, and the commodes, because of the great Taylor Heinicke, are mounting the unbelievable comeback, and Heinicke throws the ball 33 yards down to the 1-yard line to the incomparable Terry McLaurin, and McLaurin proceeds for the next 15 seconds to take his helmet off and to scream with his helmet off down the field about how Indianapolis is his town, right? No flag. No flag whatsoever.
So I had the Commanders, actually, so that one
that was awesome for me, too. Right. Yeah. Any other dumbbells? Eric? Jeff? No? Nobody?
All I will say, this is not a traditional dumbbell by our standards, but the Raiders had the most embarrassing performance anyone's had all season on Sunday. Not even a doubt. He had 101 yards passing for Carr. Jacobs couldn't run the ball. They couldn't stop that offense in New Orleans.
Didn't cross midfield to 2 minutes left,
The Jarrett Stidham got him across midfield. Yeah. That was not our traditional dumbbell, but that was embarrassing what the Raiders did on Sunday against in a game that, quite frankly, like, they needed that game. If you're going to make a run, you go to New Orleans and beat Andy Dalton, and they were embarrassed.
Why does Josh McDaniels get a pass?
I don't think that pass is going to be there very long, Gil.
No one ever wants to kill him for anything.
Second time Mark Davis has already had a closed door meeting with him. 7 games in, that's usually not a good sign.
Did they have 2 closed doors
now? Yeah.
I just want to point this out about coaches, too, just as we're on the subject. Right now, Dan Campbell for the Detroit Lions. Mm-hmm. Dan Campbell's record as the head coach of the Lions, I want to get this correct, is 4-19-1. You know what Jim Caldwell's record was when they scuttled him out of town? 36-28. What does Bill Maher say? He goes, if I could only put my finger on what that could be. Just want to point.
Detroit, by the way, my dumbbell of the week is A, the I call them Oakland. They don't deserve the name Vegas yet. Oakland going all in on their roster to be a 6-1 division, to win the division. That seemed really stupid going into the year. Going all in on Devontae Adams and Chandler Jones and that just to be the 4th best team in that division. That was something else. But To your point, Gil, I call them the Detroit Lions until they get some players on their defense. They're the Detroit Lions.
Yes.
But even then, you know, running the football really well, have a hard time being stopped. Fourth and one, Jared Goff decides to throw deep to something called Josh Reynolds.
Yes.
With the game line. To me, like, it's sort of like that movie, like, don't try to spice it up. Don't get cute. Your name's Joe Dirt.
Yeah. In my reaction, I'm sure this was the reaction of Detroit Lions fans or Detroit Lions fans, by the way, and Lions backers, which is after he threw that pass. So again, what Eric's referring to is with under 3 minutes left, Detroit down four, I guess it was, matriculating the ball down the field, the plus territory, and they had this fourth and one. I want to say it was like at the 29. Don't hold me to that yardage. But they go deep to Reynolds, like, and I just. It felt like, are you guys really even trying to win this game? Like, not only are people betting on this, like, what was that decision? And it was just so deflating if you were backing that team. Let us get to the records from last week. Shall we do that?
Right, but right before we do that, I have a really good in-game little nugget that I thought you might like.
Yeah.
This was Buffalo Green Bay. Buffalo drove down and scored a touchdown with 3 minutes and 34 seconds remaining in the first quarter to go up 7-0. The game started with a Bills three and out, and then a Green Bay decently long drive, but it didn't go that far, but it was minutes-wise, it was like 4 or 5 minutes. Now Buffalo got the ball back, drove down to go up 7-0, 3:34 left in the first quarter. Now, in jurisdictions where they have actual betting opportunities, not Nevada.
Thank you.
Here in Pennsylvania, for instance, we can bet on the second quarter in-game. Okay. At that point, the second quarter total was over 13.5. I said to myself, okay, Green Bay is now going to get the ball with 3:34 to go, and they're probably not going to be able to score before the end of the first quarter. So I said to myself, hey, if I get the Bills with the ball either at the end of the first quarter or right in the beginning of the second quarter, I love over 13.5 there because I don't think the Bills can be stopped, really. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to get the better team with the ball at that point.
Love it.
Well, it worked out very nicely because Green Bay took about, minute and a half, 2 minutes off the clock during their drive. Buffalo gets it back in perfect timing with about a minute and a half to go in the first quarter, goes right down and scores with like 14, 15 to go in the second quarter. I already got my touchdown, and now all I need is 6.5 more in the second quarter. So if you're in a jurisdiction where you have these opportunities, keep in mind of what the timing is on these quarter bets, because you can get up and, you know, you can get in front of little algorithm stuff that they're not really watching carefully enough.
That's great. By the way, are you always that polite to yourself? Are you like, hey, I think that this is going to happen? Are you like polite to yourself like that when you talk to yourself?
Well, I wasn't polite because I was still mad about the Carolina bet. So I said, hey, fucko, wake up.
By the way, here's the notes on the Detroit thing. Dolphins up 31-27. Detroit fourth and one at the Miami 35. 2:59 left. Here's my notes. Goff goes deep to Josh Reynolds. Incomplete. Never see ball again. In parentheses, Reynolds also dropped a would-be touchdown pass late in the first half. So that sort of covers the Josh Reynolds thing. All right, records.
Now I can give you the records. Okay, Gilly Ice wants to hear the records because he's a killer. The guy actually can, you know, win every bet. It's unbelievable.
No, parlay's on the heels. Parlay's on the heels.
2-1 for Gilly to go to 17-7. Jeffrey parlay with a 3-0. How you do, Jeffrey? And it's 15-9 for Jeffrey. I am 12-12, and the guest chair is also 12-12. On the teasers, I won my teaser tie Jeff at 1-7 teasers. Gilly's at 2-6.
Whoa. I won my teaser last week, Todd.
You were Jets plus 8.5, Broncos plus 8.5.
Jets lost by 5. Come on, Toddy.
Toddy. My fault. I thought the Jets lost by more. My bad.
Oh, my God. The whole board, me and Rufus at the same teaser.
Do you not want to be the court?
I'm sorry.
Do you not want to be the court stenographer of this show anymore? Because good at this.
I'd be happy to be relieved of my duties.
No.
So that makes 3-5, Gilly. 2-6, Jeffrey. And the guest chair goes to 5-3.
So Todd literally had his as a win and ours as a loss.
Yes.
Well, it's easier to make up ground that way.
unbelievable.
It's a much easier way. Okay. Anyways, that's it for the records.
Okay.
And we can move on to Thursday night.
Thursday night football. We're now the line. It's been 13.5 all day. We're seeing some 14s. It might be a point of resistance. It might not. By game time, who knows if it'll be 14 painted. But this is, on a night when the Phillies are playing the Astros in Game 5, you have a football game with the same two cities involved, this one in Houston between the Eagles and the Texans, the team with the best record in football against the team with the worst record in football. But boy, and by the way, Brandon Cooks is now officially out because the Texans, he thought he was going to get traded. He got a little pissy and moany about it. They let him sit out of practice, and now he's not playing in this game. There might be an injury, too. Who knows if it's true or not. So the point being, I guess, that this is still the NFL, and it's still the Eagles on a short turnaround and an away game, and it's still two touchdowns. So I guess the question becomes, and we'll start with you, Eric, because I don't know if you have a play on this or not, but we'll give our Thursday night thoughts. Do you lay those points? Do you stay completely away from this game?
The only thing that I you know, can advise here is taking a full 14 with Houston, but I don't even know if I want to do that. The Eagles have been a team that has, I mean, they have more second quarter points this year than the Houston Texans have points overall. They're a team that has repeatedly done really well in the first half of games and then laid off the gas in the second half. You know, that Sunday night game against Dallas where you almost lost that cover. You lost the cover against Arizona. They've been a team that hasn't really prized or valued beating the hell out of a team. And so with 14 being the number, like, and the thing being on the road, I just don't think you can lay those points with Philadelphia.
Yeah, I want nothing to do with this. In-game opportunities, I think. Todd?
I've watched National Football League football for maybe 150 years, and I have noted that when a team on a big spread has covered the week before, like, for instance, the Eagles beating the Pittsburgh Steelers as a gigantic favorite, and now they are asked to do it again 2 weeks in a row, that is the last team you would want to be laying 14 points for. So while I don't necessarily want the Texans, I certainly am not going to be on the Eagles. Now, granted, they could win 41-7, but I think Dr. Agar has made it very clear as to how dangerous it can be when the Eagles let their foot off the gas.
What about Dr. Eager? What does he think?
Dr. Eager does as well, but yeah. I was talking about Dr. Eager.
Okay, I was curious.
There's another guy.
All right.
You know about the other guy named Dr. Eager?
I do not.
Oh, okay. It's a different guy I was talking to earlier.
Jeffrey?
But anyways, yes.
I just want to talk about the Texans real quick. Forget the Eagles for a second. Last week, that 17-10 final, that is the least competitive touchdown game in league history.
Totally.
What happened last week? I mean, Malik Willis threw almost less passes than Wishnev did in the game. And that game had no chance of even being competitive.
But Hall of Fame Davis Mills at home, Jeffrey. Davis Mills at home, he's a Hall of Famer. What happened to that, Jeffrey?
Other than David Carr, I think everyone has hopped off the Davis Mills train, and correctly so, after what we've seen through seven games. It's just one of those where the Texans, again, they only lose by a touchdown, but that was as bad of a performance, if it wasn't for the Raiders earlier in the day, as bad of a performance that anyone has had all year. I think they'll at least keep this game competitive and at least stay within two touchdowns. That would be the only way I would go here.
You betting it?
No.
Okay.
But that would be the only way I would go.
Yeah, all right, that makes sense. I'm not touching it either. By the way, speaking of...
We should definitely put it in the 24-point, 10-point teaser. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
That'd be a great one to lose, Todd.
You brought up the Davis Mills thing. Bill Barnwell had this piece at ESPN.com about how bad the 2021 quarterback class was this week. And so it inspired us to sort of try to like rank the league's quarterbacks as we do power rankings for teams. But you know, with quarterbacks, like, you can get fist fights if you start doing this about people's, but I took the best shot, and the only way I could do it is if in the middle I put this catch-all of the Rodgers, Brady, Stafford, I threw Garoppolo in. So I called it the Hall of Famers or past Super Bowl quarterbacks, because you think to yourself, well, Rodgers and Brady are probably still good, but they can't affect change on their team as currently constituted. Same thing with Stafford, probably. And then Garoppolo might be the weak link on a Super Bowl ready team. So, and they're the most controversial of all these guys. So just throw them on the middle, and then you can avoid arguments, and then you can do the rest. And the finding was there are 5 elite quarterbacks, there's 4 just below elite, and then everybody else is below that group I just mentioned with Rodgers and Brady. And I don't think that it's really like, so the 5 elites, Allen, Burrow, Herbert, Mahomes, in whatever order, and we put Jalen Hurts in there because of the way he's playing, and then the 4 elite but very good quarterback play on good teams below elite, but very good quarterback play on good teams. Tua, Lamar, Cousins, Geno. And then after that group of Hall of Famers in the middle and Garoppolo, everybody else.
Where's Dak?
So that was the thing. Where, like, Dak right now comes in the group right below that middle group because you're like, well, he could be good again, but we haven't seen it yet, have we? So I don't know. We're talking about how they're playing right now. Anyway, the point of the whole thing was this league sucks right now. So there you go. There's your breaking news. I'm sure that moved all of you. All right.
I mean, that the league really needs to do some things about the quarterback position, because when you had Breeze, Rivers, Roethlisberger, now Brady and Rodgers probably retiring after this year, like, you hit on Herbert, you hit on Burrow, kind of. It's going to be, I mean, they might want to invest in the XFL. I'll just say that much.
Well, again, also, too, like, the 2020 class, I think if Tua turns out to be good, all three of those guys hit. Burrow hit, Herbert hit, Tua hit. All three of those hit.
And it spoiled our expectations, of course.
Right, right. Yeah. Again, it took a weird path to get there for Tua, but he could get there. But again, when you have a draft class where you have five guys go in the first 15 picks at the quarterback position, and Trevor Lawrence has been a massive disappointment, and I think people are finally realizing that that those two games earlier in the year were an aberration. Zach Wilson had probably the best 26 minutes he's played, and then completely threw it all away in about eight throws.
Two horrible picks.
Cost the Jets the game against a New England team that's not particularly good. Trey Lance, we've seen for three games. We have no idea. Justin Fields is improving, but the numbers still stink for the most part. And then Mac Jones, I mean, Mac Jones was legitimately awful on Sunday. The only reason that he got away with a pick six was a stupid play by John Franklin Myers.
Who of all those guys, who right now at this moment, on this Thursday in early November of their second year, who might be that, if you ranked those guys, who's number one?
It's Fields.
So that's what I was trying to get at.
Yeah.
It's fucking Fields.
Yeah.
Sorry. All right. Sorry, Jason. Here we go. All right. So now, what are we doing? Best bets. Best bets. Sides or totals, top three. And we will start with Eric Eager. Dr. Eager with number one. What do you got?
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news, with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts, as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
You call them the Commodores, which I found was funny. I call it the football team still. I will always call it the football team. In fact, I was telling my boss, Paul, I said he should buy the Commanders and call them the football team. Change the name again. But I like, in this Kirk Cousins revenge game, I'm going to take the Commodores plus 3.5.
That's my number two pick.
I like that one too. That's bad.
By the way, I call them the Commodes typically, but I'm acquiescing to most people calling them the Commodores.
Todd over here throwing darts at me. I haven't said anything mean about him, and now he's angry that we both like that game and he likes that.
No. He's not talking about you.
Nothing to do with you.
It's the fact that we all like something. Yeah.
It ends up being bad. So the fact that you like it, I like it, Gil likes it, is scaring me now. With nothing to do with you.
Even though, Todd, last week we had multiple repeats and all of them got there last week.
We did.
Yeah. So maybe it can get there.
My thing, I don't know what your reasoning is, Eric, but mine is typical is I love Taylor Heineke. One, that's another story. But really, it's just about the Vikings and the fact that every game is still close. It's not much different from last year. But the Plinko chip has ended up with them every time this year. They're 5-0 in one score games. I just don't feel like they ever have the ability to blow anybody out. And so as long as the magnet keeps coming back to zero with them, I'll take points.
Yeah, I think with me, it's Kirk Cousins is having, it's weird, it's his first trip back to Washington. He beat them on a Thursday night in 19, but like at US Bank. But he's having his worst season as a pro. They do get Hockenson, which I think will eventually help them. Offensive line has been low-key terrible. Like J.J. Watt looked like it was 2014 the other day against them. And Kirk Cousins, like I tweeted out every once in a while, but my God, like if they have a lead late in the game and it's 3rd and 10, I will bet you my life savings that Kirk's going to throw short of the sticks.
Yes.
Like he is my guy. And I tweeted out, I go, Kirk needs 8, wants 2. Like every single third down, my guy is just,
it's incredible.
And he's got Justin Jefferson. And that's why his stats, by the way, this year are bad, because he's playing the same as he always has. But to your point, like I think O'Connell's actually a good coach. I think he's a coach of the year material bet, by the way, if Sirianni falls off. But they're ahead at the end of game, so he doesn't get to put up that 100 yards and a touchdown to Justin Jefferson when they're behind and he's got to catch up. So his stats look terrible this year, even though he's kind of always been that same player. Furthermore, Washington, when Wentz was at quarterback, the guy was so scared of throwing it to McLaurin. He was so scared of making a mistake. Heineke does not care one bit.
Nope.
And so he's giving the ball to McLaurin. The Vikings secondary is a little weaker, I think, especially in the slot. They played well. I think against offenses that haven't stressed them out as much, but you know, DeAndre Hopkins had a great game last week. I just think the Vikings aren't as good as Washington, or at least not, you know, the 3.5 points plus home field.
Right. No, I agree with that. 3.5 points plus home field. The Heineke thing, by the way, I'll speak for every Washington fan. No one understood the trade for Wentz. We certainly didn't understand the King's ransom that was traded for Wentz. Everybody loves Heineke. And I said, when Wentz went down, barring an injury, we'll never see Carson Wentz take another snap for this team. And so far, so good on that prediction. Some people still have trouble with that, but we'll see. I just don't think, as long as Heineke is winning games, I don't think you could take it away from him anymore.
Well, this is one of those where everyone on planet Earth, except for one jackass, thought that Wentz was better than Heineke. I mean, it's that simple.
And I'm not saying Heineke's like, there were certainly passes that Wentz made that Heineke couldn't. Let's not like completely kill Wentz. But if you take sacks,
just look at the sack differential in these two games with Heineke starting as opposed to Wentz.
Heineke has the threat of running. That's such a big thing in today's game too. And you're right, Eric. Like he just doesn't give any fucks.
And if you were a backup in the league, why would you? Like, I mean, at that point, Heineke, you know, when he was the backup for the Vikings, he broke his foot drunkenly kicking a door open, right? Like, the guy has been through it, right?
Yeah.
He's made it. He's gotten past it. He's kind of like Gus Frerotte, another Washington quarterback, where you get in the game and the guy's just going to sling it because who gives an F? Like, if you fail, you're just going to be a backup making a few million a year. That's not a bad gig if you can get it. Look at Nick Foles' life right now. So I think that's kind of his mentality. And good for him. Like, better him than like a guy like Bridgewater, who's so afraid to make mistakes that you watch those games, you're like, oh wait, I can come up for air and they have 10 points and he doesn't even look like he's played bad. Heineke, he looks like he's played horribly and they're winning.
By the way, brief Gus Frerotte story. I was at Redskins training camp in Pennsylvania the year that Heath Shuler was drafted 3rd overall and Gus Frerotte was a 7th round draft pick. And I remember the local TV crew was interviewing Frerotte. And Frerotte, with like this shit-eating grin on his face, was like, yeah, no, Heath's the quarterback. I'm just here to support Heath. You could tell he knew. It was like, I'm so much better than this guy. It's not even funny.
And
Frerotte ended up playing many more games for Washington than Heath ever did. Okay. So, Todd, you're number one, because that's my number two.
I'm going to take the Commanders. I'm very scared now because we all like the Commanders. Steve even liked the Commanders on a numbers game. Everybody likes the Commanders. Scares the hell out of me. But it's basically this 3.5 on the road thing seems to be like a big hurdle kind of thing for me in National Football League games, where you ask a semi-good team to beat a average team by more than 3.5 on the road, and it just doesn't seem to happen. Now, Miami barely got there against a not such even great Lions team at a 3.5 number last week, but it, you know, I'm asking the Vikings, who I don't think are elite. We've all talked about Kirk Cousins. I am, you know, obviously, you know my thoughts on Kirk Cousins. I mean, I've made it very clear about how I don't, you know, I dislike Kirk Cousins in very, very visceral terms.
Speaks very highly of you.
And I just, I just don't like the guy. I don't like, you know, we've all talked about it. And he, and Dr. Agar brought up, you know, the typical.
What did Dr. Agar say about it, though?
I didn't talk to him about that. Okay. But anyways, the point is to me, if you're going to go on the road and lay 3.5 in an NFL game, you better be goddamn elite, especially against a team. By the way, no one's talking about it, but the Redskins football team, the Commanders, whatever you want to call them, they're pretty good on defense. They're not a real bad defensive team. They can hang in the game defensively with clubs. So all I need is to be down 9 late and have Heineke go in on the backdoor touchdown for me, or, you know, and that's worst case scenario. I might even win the game outright. Give me the Commanders plus the 3.5, and for all the reasons we've talked about it, and hopefully we can, you know, get away from the jinx that we all like it.
Washington's defense was elite a couple years ago as well, and then last year they completely regressed. Now, still without but Chase Young,
you have to
well
call
again.
Them at least average, right? You have to say they're at least average
for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah,
I don't know how your numbers have it, Dr. Eric Eager. With the
yeah,
Washington
I think
team.
Washington is I actually liked Washington over 7.5, over 8.5 wins preseason. The over 8.5 was like plus 150 or so. It's interesting, but I'm actually a big fan of Scott Turner. I think like he does a pretty good job of hitting the right buttons in that offense. And like I felt like they were going to be a decent team this year. And you know, being 4-4 right now, I think that their record, unlike the Vikings, is sort of emblematic of where they sit in the league.
But defensively, would you call them at least average?
I think they have average talent for sure. Jack Del Rio is a little bit of an interesting guy, right? So, getting rid of William Jackson helps. He was a liability. If Chase Young can come back and play at some point, I think that they'll be in the top third of the league, I think.
Just a dust up. Jeffrey, what's your number one?
I'm taking the 5 with the Chicago Bears against the Miami Dolphins.
Wow.
This is a week where I went through this and I was like, can I even find 3?
Tough week. week.
But, you know, it's just one of those where I'm just going to play what the market did last week. Detroit all week was at home, 3.5, 4 the whole week. I don't think Chicago at home is a point worse than Detroit at home at this point. And you have a lot of factors working for that very fast, very good at times, Miami offense. Indoors, no weather, fast track in Detroit. Easier to play offense. Now you go outside. Now it's supposed to be unseasonably warm in Chicago, but you now are playing on a turf that we know that grass field in Chicago is always terrible. And I've liked what I've seen from the Bears offense the last 2
There's
weeks.
There's weather this week, right?
Yeah. It looks like it'll be a little wind, but it looks like that it's okay. going to be unseasonably warm in Chicago. But I like what Getsy's kind of done with Fields these last few weeks. Now, last week, I know everyone pointed to Fields hopping over Micah Parsons and not touching him. I don't really care, whatever. You're in the middle of a play. You did something silly, whatever. But look, I think that they have finally realized, hey, if we have him stay in the pocket, he's going to be terrible. We got to move him around. We saw it work against New England. Miami's defense, I don't know how quickly Chubb is going to be able to make an impact. He could obviously make a big game impact right away. But Detroit was 3.5. Chicago was 5. I don't think that's right. I don't think Chicago's a 1.5 worse than Detroit. So I'll take the 5 with the Bears hosting Miami.
All right. My number one is the one that I reacted to the greatest on guessing lines on Monday, which is the Seattle Seahawks. I am taking back to the well with the Seahawks. I am taking them. I had them favored in this game.
You have
by
2 points, Gilly?
I have
plus 2.
Plus 2, yeah. Plus 2 on the Seahawks against the Cardinals. I've been high on the Seahawks for many weeks now. That has worked out very well for me. I don't really get why the Cardinals are favored here, but okay. Thank you for the opportunity. Cardinals not good at home historically. Read into that what you will. I just think the Seahawks are still chronically undervalued. And I don't know if it's the Geno thing. I don't know if it's the Pete Carroll thing. I just don't feel like people give them respect. Their defense did suck early, but their defense has shown some performances now of late where you can't really categorize them as a sucky defense. And I don't trust Kyler Murray on in any way, shape, or form. I think we all owe Pete Carroll, I'll say it again for the 10th time, we all owe Pete Carroll an apology. I think he's a Coach of the Year candidate. Everything that we snickered at this offseason, oh yeah, we don't need Jimmy G, we're going to go with Locker or Geno. And by the way, people who are sitting there saying that the only reason that Geno is playing is because Locke ended up with COVID, stop with that. That's not true. Geno was number one, and it was Locke's turn, but it wasn't. Geno's not playing because Locke got COVID. And the other thing is the running game, right? He adheres to the running game. Kenneth Walker has been outstanding. Seahawks, plus two. I just don't know why they're... I think the wrong team is favored here, is basically what I'll get at.
I feel like the psychedelics that the person who set the opening line at Seahawks plus 3.5, like I'll make an exception and I want that. I want those drugs right there. Whoever put that game at 3.5.
Yeah.
Like that was maybe the easiest bet that anybody, they might lose. It might lose.
Yeah.
Right. All these bets have a chance to lose, but the person that set that line at 3.5, I'm not exactly sure what they're doing. This game, Gil, I think even has a little bit more, matchup specific things that can help Seattle. Namely, you know, the Arizona Cardinals, the worst team in the NFL defensively on the first 15 plays of the game, giving up almost like, you know, 0.4 expected points per pass.
Interesting.
And a little bit over 0 expected points per run. You know, offensively, Cliff has been one of the worst at calling early game plays as well. And so this team, much like they did last week, they get behind early, and Seattle is a very good team at holding a lead, even against explosive quarterbacks like Justin Herbert, like Kyler Murray. They run the football. That's Pete Carroll's identity. So I think that's a good bet. Even if the power ratings of the teams were equal or they were favored, the specific matchup in this one, I think, favors Seattle in the gameplay state as well.
I love all those things as well. And by the way, when we're talking about rankings, the team, you know, power rankings, Seattle creeping into my top 10, man. They're like 10th for me.
They're close. Yeah. All I'm going to say is real quick, let's say Seattle wins this game, but not overly impressive. Obviously, they win, they cover. Tampa beats L.A. handily on Sunday, which that's a game I don't have any idea on.
Hmm.
That's the neutral site game in Munich next week.
Tampa Bay and Seattle?
Yeah. That is another number that I have a feeling is going to come in with way too much 100%. Sliding of Seattle again.
Yeah, 100%. Do we snake if I've already given my number 2?
Second?
Yes.
Yeah, so let's go to 2 for you.
I am going to Foxborough and going under in Indianapolis and New England at 40. Just one of those where we know Belichick's track record against young quarterbacks. I know 2 weeks ago it didn't work against Fields. It very much worked last week against Zach Wilson. I do think that New England defense has had some weird things against running quarterbacks, and that is the one little hesitation here. Ellinger wasn't terrible last week. He had the fumble, but other than that, I thought he was fine.
He's all right.
He was fine last week. But one thing that I think gets discounted here, Indianapolis defense, for the most part this year, has looked quite good. And I don't know how New England is going to move the ball either in this game. I think this is a grinded-out game where last week, again, New England kept getting the ball in the damn red zone last week and kept kicking field goals. We got there on under 40 and a half in a game where New England kept getting the ball in the red zone. They can't finish drives with Mac Jones at quarterback. So we're going under 40 in Foxborough with Indy and New England.
Jeffrey Parlay, under 40, Indianapolis and New England. 40 or 39 and a half? What are we giving them, Tom?
I mean, I got 540s in front of me.
I thought it was 39 and a half, but you guys can make the call.
I mean, I got 440s in front of me.
I got 340s and I have 739 and a halves. But is the rule three? The rule's three. I mean, he's got 40.
There is no rule of three, but we'll give it to him.
Okay. Oh, really? There is no rule.
I thought we used the rule.
There's no rule of three. I think what it is when a guy's a little heavier, you know, it's tough.
There we go.
Life.
Yes, we're fat shaming. The doctor fat shamed me yesterday, Wishnev. Come on now.
Of the
that
eight?
Are healthy.
Let me just
and
ask you this.
Very, very, you know, health conscious. And then there's others that, you know, carry a lot of weight around, and it's tough for them in life, and you got to give them a little.
Todd, when you're shoving 8,000 calories down your gullet in one day, What was the food that you ate where you're like, oh my God, I miss this so much? Was it the pizza? Was it the chocolate chip cookies? What was it? Fat ass.
It was all of it. It was so great. I can't even tell you. The slices of pizza. At the end of the night, my stomach hurts so bad, but I was like, I got to get a couple more slices. So I had to, because there's three iconic pizza shops in Pittsburgh and Squirrel Hill in basically a 70-yard, two block area, Napoli's, Aiello's, Minio's. And I love Aiello's. I love Napoli's. I even love Minio's, but I had to hit. It was just.
How would a Yinzer rank those?
Well, look, people tell Yinz, you better go down there with a nice appetite because you're going to have a big meal and you might even have a second meal because Yinz get a little pizza. It puts you in the mood for some pizza and that. You're watching a Stiller game. You're thinking, oh, I'm getting depressed about my Stillers. Maybe I could get some pizza and some Häagen-Dazs and that. You know, it's a little bit of an upscale kind of ice cream, but, you know, we're from Bergen at.
All right, what's your number two?
Okay, my number two is going to be the New England Patriots. Ooh. I'm going to take the New England Patriots.
No problem with that.
Can I have five? Is that what we have? No, minus five?
No, you cannot.
I have a couple fives.
It's five and a half painted.
I see two fives, so he doesn't quite get
rule
there.
Rule of three, Todd. Rule of three.
There is no rule of three, but okay.
Skinny I'll people don't get that.
I'll take. That's true. That is true. I am one of the health conscious in the world. Pats minus five and a half. I'm going to take them. I had the Commanders last week against that Texas quarterback who's just a running back, basically. And he was at home, and he wasn't terrible. You know, they kind of dressed him up to be okay, but he wasn't good by any means. Let's not go crazy how good he was. He wasn't that good. Now you're asking him to go on the road to Bill Belichick, who's going to, you know, cook up some defensive schemes to make him miserable on an Indianapolis Colts team that I just don't like this team at all. And now you're asking him to go into Bill Belichick land and do something and keep it close. I think that just the Patriots are going to – it's a recipe for disaster for that quarterback is what I'm thinking. So I want the Patriots minus the five and a half. I know the Patriots aren't fantastic, but I do think they're going to be good enough to cook up some trouble for Mr. Ehlinger, or however you pronounce his name.
Ehlinger is the name.
Yeah, that too. I always mess up his name.
Dr. Eric Eager. Yeah, it's tough G it is.
I'm going to go. So the definition of insanity is continuing to bet the Jaguars because they look good in all the metrics. They have one of the best early game defenses. Net success rate, you know, they have a positive point differential. They have a young quarterback we just talked disparagingly about. Be that all as it may, I think that they win outright. What are we getting? 1.5 here. I'll take the 1.5, mm-hmm. whatever, with them at home against the Oakland Raiders. They have not deserved Las Vegas yet. I just think this Raiders team is a team that, like, if you get up on them, there's going to be some quit to this team at this point, right? They're nowhere close to winning the AFC West. That was their goal going into the year. That's why they went all in. They're getting older. Derek Carr's hurt. You might not even see him complete these games. And you know, as bad as the Jags have been and, you know, lost however many one score games in a row, I think they pulled this one out in Jacksonville this week.
Would you agree, the 2-5 Raiders, the 2-6 Jaguars, would you agree that the loser of this game spirals into season-long depression mode?
Yes, and that's I think I see that outcome much more drastically with the Vegas Raiders. I just think that team, you know, there's not a, like, the product of drafting horrible players for five straight years is finally catching up to them, and there's only so many, like, oh, our quarterback's a 7 out of 10 and Davante Adams and, you know, Max Crosby, there's only so much of that you can cover up at that point.
Let me ask you about this. I'm sorry, Jeff, but let me ask you about this Jaguar stat. First and third quarters. So this is scoring margin through week 8. First and third quarters, the Jaguars are plus 66. That leads the NFL. So pregame preparation going into the first quarter, maybe halftime adjustments going into the third. They're plus 66. Leads the NFL. Second and fourth quarters. Do you know what their differential is? Minus 52.
Ooh.
Which is either worst or second worst in the NFL. I'm not sure. What do you make of that?
I think it's noise mostly, but I also, because the hard part is, you know, if you want to predict team wins from one year to the next, you're better off taking one score games and calling them half a win than you are to call them what they actually are.
Which they're 0-6 in those. Yeah,
exactly. So like, so part of me is like, okay, you know, one score games are mostly noise. Doug Peterson was the kind of guy who could win one score games, namely a Super Bowl back when he was the coach of the Eagles. And now all of a sudden he can't. Like, that to me strikes me as just randomness. But this team has been terrible, like otherworldly terrible one score games the last four head coaches they've had. So I and Gardner Minshew and Trevor Lawrence being the two quarterbacks. Like, I just think a lot of it is just a really, run of bad luck. And, you know, at some point it's going to turn around. And I think this week might be one of them.
Yeah. Let me just one last one before we move on, cause we want to give our third picks, but that Eagles team that won the Super Bowl, they had this unbelievable success rate on third and long, like the Carson Wentz and then the Nick Foles Eagles team that won the Super Bowl, third and seven and longer. Like, it was just unbelievable. Do you look back on that team with that stat in mind? Maybe that's that specifically. And the fact that he was willing to go for it on fourth downs. And just sort of there, and then, by the way, using replay rules from the future to win that Super Bowl, let's not forget that detail, because those replay rules, remember Collinsworth, I have no idea. They completely used the changed replay rules to give him a touchdown that hadn't existed for that entire season. Do you look at that team with sort of as like a historical anomaly or just like a one-off strange champion?
Well, I certainly think with respect to Carson Wentz, it was really emblematic of how important it is to be good on early downs, right? Because the late down stuff can fish you out of a season, but it can't sustain you, right? And Nick Foles as well, he had a good run there as well. But they got lucky that year. But then, you know, Doug Peterson, to his credit, pressed that luck, and they had an enormous, they had a lot of high variance fourth downs. That all went, came up well for them, and they won a Super Bowl. They also did a really good job of team building. They've done really good job of team building around two quarterbacks on rookie deals. This year they're the favorite in the NFC, and they were that 2017 year as well. I think they do a lot of things right, but to your point, they were aided that year by a lot of third down variants.
Right. So does that translate to the Doug Peterson of this year, that maybe people got him wrong, that maybe it was just this, he kept rolling sevens, or terrible, whatever metaphor you want to use.
I don't know, because here's where I'll come back. He went 9-7 and made the playoffs twice with Wentz at quarterback again, and we've all like come up to realize that Wentz stinks.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
The one year was bad when the wheels really fell off of Wentz. They did terribly, but he got that team to three winning seasons with Wentz. And I think looking at Frank Reich and now finally looking at Washington with Ron Rivera, I think that's a bigger feat than people realize.
I mean, the following year, they almost won two road playoff games with Foles. Yeah, they needed the double doink in Chicago. But, I mean, that interception was a fluky play that ended that New Orleans game.
That's a good point. Yep. Number three, Eric.
Yeah, so number three for me, I don't want to repeat what anybody else has. So that's, I guess, I know that's not the rule, but I'm going to go with Ravens -2.5 in New Orleans against the Saints. Ravens getting not only the full, the 10 days from a Thursday night game, but also the extra day for Monday night. The Saints did play at home last week, which helps them, as far as a double, back to back. But I think last week was much more about the Raiders' ineptitude than the Saints' brilliance. Andy Dalton's played well for Andy Dalton, but this is a Dalton primetime game, folks. And so I think Lamar and the Ravens go ahead and they win, and they win by margin on Monday night.
Dodd.
My number three is going to be over 42.5 in the Panthers-Bengals game. I'm starting to like this. I always kind of thought that the Panthers would be better with Walker than with, all their other iterations at quarterback. I don't think he's that bad. But what I really love is I love this running back monster they have in Foreman, who just – He runs with such gash, he just real violence this guy runs with. And I really like him. They starting the game against the Bucks and this past game, he really gashed the hell out of him. I just watched the Bengals get gashed by the Browns running game. I don't see why the Panther – to me, the Bengals are not – superstars on defense. I mean, I think they're about an average team on defense. I don't know, Dr. Eager could tell us what he thinks about that. But I don't think the Bengals are elite on defense. So I think Carolina can get us some points. And then I think the Bengals will snap out of it and score at home like they typically do. So 42.5 doesn't sound like so out of the question to me with this Panthers game. I had over 41 in the Panthers Falcons for similar reasoning, and I'm going to go with this over 42.5.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
Jeffrey Parlay.
What are we giving me on Kansas City and Tennessee, fellas?
12.5.
I'm seeing 12.5.
I'll lay the lumber with Kansas City on Sunday night against the Titans. I know that has been a matchup that Kansas City has struggled with. Obviously, last year they were shut out in the regular season in Nashville. The year they made the Super Bowl, they lost that weirdo game to the Titans. But if it's a compromised Tannehill, or a dude who is not ready to throw the ball in Malik Willis at an NFL level, with Andy Reid coming off a bye, again, it has not been quite as good over the last few years as it obviously was in Philadelphia, where he legitimately never lost coming off a bye in Philadelphia. I'll lay the lumber with Kansas City. And the Titans, look, the Titans have won 5 straight games. This is not a good football team.
They're not great.
These teams have the same records. Which is insane to me. Go ahead, Eric.
Gil, you might have to look it up historically, but like the Titans might be the first team in NFL history to, in week 2, after being the one seed in their own conference, being 10-point or more underdogs as they were at Buffalo. They might also be the first team in league history to be 12-point underdogs or more coming off a 5-game winning streak.
I would imagine it's pretty safe.
Yeah,
I would imagine.
This team is the team that literally no one believes in, and I feel like somebody should commission a study on Mike Vrabel and what the hell he's doing with this Titans team, because they have no talent and they somehow win every single year.
Well, this is again. It I think it kind of goes back to the question I asked Rufus last week about what type of numbers can we find on just regular coaching, and some of this stuff is so intangible that it happens during the week. It doesn't translate over to what we see on the field. There's a reason that the Giants have gotten off to this good start. Some will say smoke and mirrors. I'll say, yeah, that's a little bit of it. But Brian Daboll is a really good coach through this small sample size. Same deal with Vrabel. Same deal with Tomlin up until this year, where he never went under 500. That's obviously going to drop out. But I think this is a smacking. I like KC. I'll lay the lumber.
I've always liked Vrabel, and I even liked him this year.
He's a good coach. He does some weird things. He's like Tomlin. He's very similar to Tomlin.
Well, I like him better than Tomlin.
Yeah, I like him better than Tomlin because he remembers some of the Belichick tricks, like taking the delay of games above 5 minutes. Like he has some of those tricks to him.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to go there on Daboll yet, because I do think the Giants, like, even in
let's slow down.
There's a reason I said in a small sample size. Yeah. Skill. I think he will be a good coach long term, but again, it's only 8 games.
Yeah, even that loss to the Seahawks, I'm like, oh, they got a fumble at the 2 again. Here we go. You know, oh, Tyler Lockett dropped a short touchdown pass. And I know Richie James did botch 2 fumbles. I have not done a total all year.
Oh,
guess what?
Here we come. Here comes a Gilly total.
Total time. You know where I'm going with this? I'm taking an under. Can you guess? Can you guess which game I'm going under on? Based on what you know about me and my strong beliefs? All right, too much time. I am going
Buccaneers?
Under. What's
Buccaneers?
That? Yes, exactly. Under 42.5 on the Rams and the Buccaneers, a game that I would want no part of on the side. By the way, it looks like Cooper Kupp will play for the Rams. My thinking here is this. I find these two teams, as I've said many times, to be horrific on offense. Just absolutely horrific on offense. A lot of people still are on the Bucs bandwagon. Oh, the Bucs still have the parts. They can get it going. I'll believe it when I see it. And Cooper Kupp isn't your number one option. He is the entire offense with the Rams. So my thing is this, barring the turnover in territory that will torpedo this bet, I have to sort of rely on what we think about these defenses, even from a pre-flop. I know we're a long way from before the season started, but the Buccaneers defense was supposed to be good. The Rams defense was supposed to be good. I got to think that these are the best units on the field. And I would go under 42.5, even though this is ticked down from 43.5 to 42.5. I'm just going to rely on that as my third best bet. I just think these offenses, again, turnovers can crush us on either side in the wrong place. But if this is just a punt fest, I think that's what I'm betting on here.
By the way, I keep thinking, I guess you were going to guess this, so I figured you were going to say this, and I couldn't agree with you more about the Buccaneers. But it's interesting because it makes me think about the last time that we had Dr. Eager on, and I still remember this pretty clearly. We have to give him a little props about this. Kansas City Chiefs looked really duty-iferous last year at a particular time when he was on the show. They looked horrible. And he said, no, they're still a really good team. And they did end up being a really good team. And I thought of that because of what you said about the Bucs in the inverse, because the Bucs really are a bad team. They're not going to be able to turn the switch the way the Chiefs are and the way Dr. Eager called it last year. So I think you're right, Gilly. And I don't know what you think, Dr. Eager.
Was that you, Eric, or was that Aaron Schatz? Who was that said that?
I think it was him.
Was it you?
Yeah.
I remember that he said that the Chiefs were like the number two or number three best team when they looked horrendous. It was on our show. And I remember thinking, oh, he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. But he was right.
Eric doesn't know ball. Yeah. I think that I also remember I gave Todd a little bit of shit for teasing too much. And I also think anecdotally, teasers have been just awful this year, haven't they?
Specifically.
Well, and I feel like we, like everybody in the content space, like now, Gil, you've been in it forever, so I think that you've long known, Stanford Wong and stuff like that. I feel like the whole gambling space just read that book this year,
yes,
and started like giving out Wong teasers, and they've all been ass.
Yeah,
and it just kind of makes me laugh a little bit. But. Yeah, I mean, I was nervous. I do root for the Chiefs, so maybe I just got lucky and rooting for my own team. I do think, though, by the way, I don't think they cover 12.5 this week. Andy Reid at home is an absolute privilege at the beginning of games, getting down 17-0 to the Raiders, 10-0 to the Chargers. Blowing an 18-point lead to the Bengals last year in the playoffs, a game I went to. And additionally, he's 1-4 against the Titans since he's been the Chiefs coach. The only time they won was in the AFC title game, another game I was at, but they got backdoored from 18 to 11. So they only won that game by 11. I just have a hard time seeing the Chiefs winning by margin at home. It's weird, but it's been kind of a trend for the Chiefs over the last, 2 years or so.
Even though I'm laying the lumber, I know for a fact what Eric's saying here, because it only feels like when Kansas City plays the dregs of the league at home, that's when they really blow them up. And also, too, let's face it, Derek, other than last year on Sunday night, it was whenever they saw the Broncos in recent years, they would whip it up on them a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and the Raiders, they really gave the Raiders.
Yeah, beat the Raiders by 40 last year.
Yeah, this year they got out with a W, thankfully, frankly. Not because of Andy Reid, but despite him in that case. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how much better they get. Obviously, with the new wide receivers, I think they're hitting their stride, and the bye came at the right time for them. So I'm not taking it with the Titans, I don't think here, but I can't lay it with the Chiefs.
Specifically on the Wong teasers, I completely agree with your point that everybody apparently landed on it finally this year. The reason why we all won our teasers though this past week is because for the first time, what was really killing the Wong teasers this year is not the 1.5 to 2.5 point dogs teased up through the 3 and the 7. Those have actually worked out quite well. And if you had stuck to those all year, you'd have been doing fine. It's the 7.5 to the 8.5 favorites teased down through the 7 and 3, which is very consistent with the NFL,
the dogs.
Intuitively, right? Like, of course they're not winning. This league is crazy. And so this was the first week where we didn't have the opportunity to pick one of those teams this past week, which is why we all finally got home.
Well, we also needed the Jets to get in the teaser back door as well, and we did get in the back door.
Yes.
Yeah. The interesting part of the Wong teaser, obviously, is you want low totals, which are paramount now. But those low totals are actually weirdly, I think, in an unpredictable season, they entice you to make bad bets, as you said, from the 8.5, when a team's laying 8.5 down to laying 2.5. The variance is on the scores, right? So those teams like Tampa and the teams like the Rams, they all lose games they should win, and that can blow up a whole teaser, especially if you're round robining them and the Bucks cut one of your legs out from under you. You're basically praying that all the other ones hit so you can break even that day.
Yeah. Are you doing much round robining of teaser legs?
I did it. Gil, I'm gonna expose some of my degeneracy. I do it a little bit more in the CFL.
Nice.
But in the NFL, it became very clear to me early in the season that the NFL was not, you know, when your commies kicked the extra point to go up down 8 against Detroit in week 2 and missed and lost by 9 and blew up my entire round robin.
Oh, brutal.
I decided to lay off the teasers for a little bit.
Joey Sly missing that one. Yeah. Oh, the taco holders. We'll call them everything but the team, what the team wants.
The breadsticks.
the W logo, total taco holder thing that they give you at a restaurant. That's all.
Good.
All reminds me of. And by the way, Daniel Snyder supposedly selling the team. I will believe this when I see it. I think that moment that comes where even if he had an inkling, which I'm not sure I believe that he does, but even if he had an inkling of selling it, I still think in the end, criminal investigation, whatever, I think he'll just be like, wait a minute, if I sell this team, despite the billions I will make, I will become an irrelevant human being. And I don't think his ego can take that. I really don't. I think that's the only calculus that matters to him in the end. All right, where are we? Teaser of the week.
Teasers.
Now that we've just talked about teasers. All right, teaser. By the way, Survivor real quick. For those who are still involved in Survivor, there's 123 out of 6,133 left in Circa Survivor. I think your only real options this week, and there's a handful of them. Kansas City might be one of them. We talked about them being a 12.5 point favorite, but they have home game against Jacksonville coming up. They got 2 Denver games. Buffalo's a big double-digit favorite at the Jets, but Buffalo, if you're in Circa anyway, you have a Thanksgiving save for them, so you probably don't want to use them in that. New England's a 5.5 point favorite against Indianapolis, and with apologies to Todd's play, I don't know if I trust them. And then there's Philadelphia tonight, which is the biggest bet on the board, a biggest favorite on the board, at Houston, but they have other opportunities to use the Eagles too later in the season, which lands me on Cincinnati, who is a 7.5 point favorite against Carolina. They do play at Pittsburgh in 2 weeks. I think, and I not only do I think, but if I were still alive in Survivor, I would have played Atlanta this past week. That would have been a sweat. And I have Cincinnati earmarked for this week. That's Survivor. Those are my Survivor thoughts anyway. We have the guy with 6 entries left on a numbers game tomorrow. We had him last week.
Did he survive last week?
He went 3-3. He went Dolphins and Cowboys. And I sort of suggested to him, don't play all 6 on 1 again like you have been. And so when the Dolphins fell behind, I was like, I should not open my mouth ever again. Because I felt so bad. I was like, please get home, Dolphins. Because I don't want to be blamed for this. All right, teaser of the week. Eric, we start with you.
I just talked mess about these kind of teasers, but it's sort of how the board is laying out. I'm going to go Bengals down to 1.5.
Me too.
In Cincinnati, my backyard here. And your Seahawks, the fighting Geno's up to 8.
Love it. Toddy?
I am going to take the Atlanta Falcons up to 9. Is that correct? Because they're getting 3, right?
Yes, that's right, Todd.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I want Atlanta up to 9 just because it's the Chargers. It's the goddamn Chargers. Who do they beat by more than 9 points when they even win the game anyways? I mean, the Chargers are just whatever. We've gone chapter and verse about that. I think Atlanta's a legitimate team at home. They crushed the Niners earlier this year. I think there's no reason why they can't stay within 9 with the LA, you know, ridiculousnesses. The Saints is going to be my second one. I'm going to go with the Saints plus the 8.5. Maybe they can't beat Baltimore, but I don't see them getting blown out at home there. So I'll take the Saints plus the 8.5 as the second leg.
Jaguars up to 7.5, and the Seattle Seahawks up to 8 for me.
I got Eric's. I'm doing the Bengals and the Seahawks because we cannot resist. That's got to be the play. Full disclosure, that's not in my account yet, but I probably bet it by the end. Bengals and Seahawks. Which brings us to the final two questions of each and every show. One, which is the big favorite, in your opinion, most likely to lose outright? Eagles, 13.5 or 14-point favorites on the road against the Texans tonight. Bills, 12.5-point favorites on the road against the New York Jetropolitans. Let's see here. Bengals are in there. 7.5-point favorites at home against the Panthers. They have to be included. As does, of course, the Chiefs, 12.5-point favorites at home against the Titans. Which of those is the most likely to lose outright, in your opinion, Eric?
Chiefs.
Wow.
Yeah, I just think it's just a classic, you know, Chiefs against the AFC South meltdown game.
Dodd?
I'm going to say the Panthers could maybe pull the upset against the Bengals. I'm a lot more high on the Panthers than most people are. And the Bengals, let's remember one other thing. They don't seem to be able to block for Joe Burrow. If you can get pressure on him, some bad things can happen. And we know that for underdogs to win these games, turnovers usually are a factor, maybe a strip sack here or there. And the Panthers somehow pull it out of their tuchuses.
Buffalo.
Wow. What a homer.
That was my first thought. You know, the correct answer this week would be none of them. But
I think Todd's right. And the spread reflects. It's probably the Bengals. But I really wanted to be provocative and say the Eagles tonight. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. Because, like, I'm just thinking, a short week, road game, like all those you
Davis
know.
Mills at home is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, Davis Mills
Jeffrey
at home
Farrell.
Is a Hall of Famer.
Who the hell is Mills throwing to tonight?
With no Cooks and
Nico's out as well, right? I mean,
oh, Ray Guy just passed away at the age of 72. Oh,
yeah. So
Pierce runs for 200 yards. Pierce,
I mean, I look. I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I wanted to find a way to say Houston over Philly. I just can't do it.
No, I'm going to go Bengals. Ray Guy, who, if I'm not mistaken, he was a first-round draft pick, was he not? Back in the day?
Yep.
Yeah, punter. 23rd pick in the 1973 draft. And Al Davis is like, you've never seen a punter like this.
He was right.
Was Russell Erksleben a first-round pick, too, for the Saints? Was that the only other punter? Let me see.
How about Reggie Roby?
He was not a first-round pick. Russell.
But I used to love his punts.
Russell Erksleben was a... Sorry. Was he a first-round pick? How is this not easy to call up? All right, we'll work on that. Yes, first round, pick 11. Russell Erksleben was the 11th pick in the 1979 draft. You believe
that? Some of these offenses might consider taking a punter in the first round next year, the way things are going.
It's not a bad idea. Can you imagine the Saints picked him 11th? Weren't the Saints like 0-1 whatever at that point in their history? Jeez. That's unbelievable. All right. Ray Guy passing away at the age of 72. All right. And then the final question. Let's say we lived in a bizarro world. We were forced, to bet a side in each and every one of these games, but you were allowed one pass. Eric, what's the game you would want no part of?
Colts Patriots.
Ooh.
I think the both teams are relatively similar in how awful they are.
Yeah, I don't trust either. Todd?
I don't want any part of this Raiders Jaguars game. Well, I agreed with Eric's opinions on that game. I don't like the Raiders lost 24-0. So if they're ever going to have an all-in game, this is the week. So I don't want any part of the Jaguars. Then on the other hand, it's the Raiders stink, and without Waller, they look horrible. So I just don't want any part of that game. By the way, can I just say one more thing? Why? And this will be just the typical rant. Do we have to have 8 games at 1 and 2 at 4 o'clock?
This is a brutal
week. I mean, what is it? I know this National Football League, they're worth a zillion dollars and they're all rich and they don't give a shit about the regular guy who's their fan and they could care less and they'll make the ticket prices $8 billion and hey, let's chaser out a little bit more money because hey, we don't have enough money. We need to like scoop out that last extra dollar from everybody. But could we just have 5-5 or not 4-5 or something? I mean, 8-5. 8-2, it's ridiculous.
It is. It's really bad. And Rams and Bucks was supposed to be this huge marquee matchup, right? Why are they doing this? Is it for the World Series?
Remember this. Well, World Series is supposed to end Saturday. The rain out pushed it to Sunday.
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you so they can chaser up every last little dollar. Because if we don't, if we have $10 billion and we don't have $11 billion, then we're going to feel sad. So we have to get $11 billion.
By the way, for the non-tribes people listening, chazir is the Hebrew word for pig, and Todd speaks a very just absolutely bastardized version of the Hebrew language. It's called Yiddish-ish with a Yinzer accent. So that's why he says chazir.
Try doing a show where the bulk of it is during the later slate. We're going to have our work cut out for us on Sunday, especially if those games end up being bad. Even though I think that Rams-Bucks game will be close because both those offenses, like you said, not good.
Brutality.
Not good. This is the game you don't want any part of. Oh, Green Bay-Detroit. We didn't mention that game once, so I'm going to go with that.
I can't argue with that one either. I'm with you, Todd. I said this on Guessing Lines. To me, it's the Raiders. It's the Raiders game. I mean, just everything you said. Raiders, Jaguars, the line reflects it, right? It's 1.5. I have no idea what we're getting from either of these teams. All the reasons you said, I don't need to elaborate. And by the way, all of these answers are valid because this league is, every answer we came up with here, this league is nuts. So some of these games, like, yeah, I wouldn't want any part of Green Bay, Detroit. Colts, Patriots, I'm with you, Eric. To me, I wouldn't want any part of that, but I'll go with the Raiders and the Jaguars. Okay, we've done all we can do. I have a total in there. We got three picks. Todd's got some work to do to catch up to us. Eric, we appreciate it. That first time on the show from Sumer Sports. That's Summer without the second M. Sumer, S-U-M-E-R Sports. And all your stuff, all your podcasts linked at your Twitter as well, at Eric Eager _.
Absolutely. And that, thanks for having me. This is so much fun. And it's good to chop up football with you guys.
Absolutely. Love to have you on again. You know, if you can stand us, you know, cursing and saying Yiddish.
Things. I'm at T Wishnev, by the way, if you want to.
I think I follow you, Todd.
Oh, there you go.
Todd Wishnev, who promises us he will not have 8,000 calories a day and will try to keep his weight down now. But
but I will tell you, first of all, I'm taking all comers on the weight maintenance bet because that's a much harder thing.
Taking bets on that.
So if all the naysayers who want to say I'm not going to be able to keep the weight off, let's cook it up, baby. Let's cook up a bet. And then the other thing is I'm going to be having a holiday every week because I'm going to have my bank full of calories. I already played tennis in 43-degree weather this morning so I could bank up some calories for my next cheat day.
All right.
So what do you think of them apples, you big boys?
He wanted to say
you big boys. What are you moving out here so we can have these cheat days with you?
And we can play tennis. November 15th, it starts. I think I have one last week of nice weather here in Pittsburgh.
All right.
So it's coming to an end here in Pittsburgh, and I think I will be out there shortly to kick both of your asses at tennis.
There we go.
Good one, man.
For Eric Giger, for Jeff Parlay, for Todd Wishnev, Gil Alexander, thanks for listening to the Megapod. Good luck with all your weeks, or with all your bets, I should say. Week 9 of the National Football League.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's Craft Team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.